Blog Talk Radio.
Think big. ThinkBigRadio.com for all of your realty, business, financial, entertainment, and networking needs. We would like to thank you all for your continued support and spreading the word about ThinkBigRadio.com. Have you spread the word today? For our new listeners, please make sure you visit www.thinkbigradiohosts.com. That's www.thinkbigradiohosts.com to learn more about your big thinking hosts and how their networks and businesses can assist your goals. Without further ado, let's get this big thinkers interview started. I'm Elaine Seth, your host for this evening, and tonight we have an absolutely amazing individual with us, Mr. Orlando Bowen. Orlando, are you there?
I'm here. Good evening, Elaine. How are you doing tonight?
I'm wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us this evening.
It's my pleasure.
Now, before we get started, if you would please let our listeners know more about how they may reach you and learn more about you.
Certainly. They can reach me at my website, www.orlandobowen.com, B-O-W-E-N is the last name. Also, I can be reached through www.sportscelebs.com. Those are probably the two most efficient ways of getting in touch.
Wonderful. Now, let's start from the beginning. How did you first discover your passion for sports and mainly football?
Well, I think it actually started as a passion for basketball. Go figure. In the seventh grade, I was really passionate about playing basketball. I had an uncle that was an all-star at a local college. And just seeing all the trophies and plaques that plastered his room, I said, you know what, I want to be like that one day. And I went out for my first organized tryout in the seventh grade, and I made the team. I was a pretty tall kid, and I had a pretty good season, but there was one experience. I was running down the court on a fast break. I was a center on the team, and our point guard passed the ball. I was so excited. I grabbed it, dribbled it, went off my foot, and went out of bounds. And the coach at the time started jumping up and down, screaming, and threw his hat down and said to our point guard, "Don't you know that he can't dribble? You shouldn't pass the ball." And at that point, I decided that I would never be the weakest link in anything that I did. And then that summer, I was training about 8 hours a day. And that continued the following summer, and the skill sets that I developed, partly from a work ethic standpoint, but just from a physical ability standpoint, transcended basketball. And when I stopped growing vertically and started my chest, then shoulders started getting a little bit wider. The football team started calling, so
okay.
I answered the call. Yeah. So that's in a nutshell how it happened. A good friend of mine convinced me to go out for the football team. I tried it out. Initially didn't like it, but then they put me on defense, and once I got my first tackle, and I fell in love with the sport.
Wow, and to the point that I understand you received a full athletic scholarship from Northern Illinois University.
Yeah, so I was born in Montego Bay, Jamaica, emigrated to Canada at an early age. From there, I went to high school in Canada, then got a football scholarship to attend Northern Illinois, just outside of Chicago. I played linebacker and defensive end there, and graduated a couple times, bachelor's in marketing, master's in the management of information technology, then worked as an IT consultant in the Windy City, actually just north of Grant Park, where Obama held his speech a couple nights ago.
All right.
And, I worked as an IT consultant there for 6 months before coming back to Toronto to play in the Canadian Football League with the Toronto Argonauts as a linebacker. And, I was plying my trade that way, but always the real reason for me going or coming back to Canada was an opportunity to give back and make a difference in the lives of others, and especially young people.
Right. And I see you played for the Argonauts and the Tiger Cats. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
What years did you play?
2000 through 2003, I was with the Argos, and then for a significant part of 2003 and a part of 2004, I was with the Tiger Cats, which was kind of funny because they're crosstown rivals. And, I actually, when I was playing for the Argos, I had some very interesting heated moments on the field with some of the Tiger Cats. So it was interesting becoming one of their teammates when I was Hamilton. It was good. It was good. Good times.
Wow. And what was your most memorable event in playing for the CFL?
Most memorable event, I'd have to say, was one of the Eastern Finals that we were playing in the playoffs in Montreal. And a speech that our coach gave, where, you know, he was generally a pretty reserved guy, very eloquent, great speaker, Michael Clemens. He's actually from Florida. And
Pinball,
yeah. And he stirred the room. He was very animated, which he often is, but he was, like, throwing stuff around, and he showed a level of passion that I hadn't seen before. And I think, you know, we were inspired. A lot of the guys, you know, were, their eyes started to well up with water, and, you know, were ready to go out there and run, fly around and make plays. So it was that particular speech, that particular game, was one that I remember.
Wow, and I had the opportunity to meet Mr. Clemens and listen to one of his inspirational speeches. And I have to tell you, he's small in stature, but when he delivers that message, it just really ignites you and just ignites a passion. And I can imagine all these big football players, and like you said, their eyes welling up, and just, you know, I could just see it. I could feel that, because I remember sitting in the room thinking the same thing. My goodness, you know.
Great. We were very fortunate and blessed to have him as a coach and as a friend and a motivator. That I think in terms of creating opportunities for us to get involved as players in the community and making a difference, he definitely paved the path that way and created a lot of those opportunities where we began to see that we could actually have an impact. So I'm grateful. Thanks, Mike.
Now, in addition to your sports career, I understand that you've also had the opportunity to be an actor. If you would tell us a few of the roles that you may have played.
Sure. I guess one of my favorites, the first role was in a movie called The Sum of All Fears with Morgan Freeman and Ben Affleck. That was my first, opportunity or foray into the acting world. And it was interesting. It was a ton of fun. I played a football player, go figure. We were playing in the stadium, Super Bowl, and it happened to get blown up. But it was a great opportunity to have that experience and meet some folks that were more, I guess, full-time into that type of career. So it was good. It was a good introduction. Later on, I had a chance to do have a role on Playmakers, which was another kind of football/reality type of show where it, you know, dealt with some of the on the field and off the field lives of football players, and it was good. I say it was well received. We averaged about, I think, 2.something million viewers, but it didn't fly very well with the NFL. I think it was a little bit too real. but yeah, so it was a good time. And I currently host a fitness show, or co-host a fitness show called The Art of Building Bodies. And it's all about how to naturally increase your lean muscle mass and have fun in the process. I've had a great time with that. I haven't done a whole lot in terms of acting as of late. I've done a couple, chunky soup commercials type of thing, But my main focus as of late has been to really get things going with respect to the programming that we run for youth.
That's wonderful. And I understand that you are a spokesperson for various organizations. If you would just touch on a few of those, like the Boys to Men Mentoring Program.
Certainly. I've been very fortunate to meet other individuals that are very passionate about creating opportunities for youth to maximize their potential or move towards their potential. Boys to Men is a program that is focused on that and the strong mentoring component, as you can imagine, where we create opportunities to just engage young men and talk to them in terms of some of the things that we wished we had folks to share with us in terms of what to look out for, how to spend your time, your free time, and just helping them to understand some of the ropes so that they can navigate the system a bit easier and really maximize what they get out of it from an educational perspective, from a personal perspective, from a spiritual perspective. So so it's been really good that way. We've been able to engage a number of youth in that particular program. There are other programs that I'm involved with, not necessarily an official spokesperson, but Big Brothers Big Sisters is one. Another one with a strong mentoring component, where we are. My thing is just how can I help? A lot of the youth nowadays they struggle for hope. They just want to be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel and have something to hold on to. So I find myself kind of gravitating to organizations that tend to provide that or provide opportunities for individuals to provide that for the youth. So, Big Brothers Big Sisters is one. Leave Out Violence was one that I was more intimately involved with years back. Another organization called Future Aces is one as well. I just try to help out where I can.
And that's absolutely wonderful. And I think it's really important, taking your success into consideration that you are so willing to give back. And it's not always about completely changing a person or completely reconstructing their thought process, but more so planting seeds. Because seeds, once they're planted, in due time, if nurtured and given enough time and some hope, like you say, rays of hope, they grow and they flourish.
Yes, precisely. One of the things we talk about is exactly that, because I know sometimes some of the folks that we work with are, will spend a lot of time with a young person and be like, why don't they get it? And we always have to remind ourselves that we're, Rome wasn't built in a day, for one. We have, the opportunity to give everything that we can possibly give to help a young person, see that light, see that ray of hope. Some get it immediately. Some it'll take a week. Some it'll take a year, some 5 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. What's important is that we continue to give everything that we can and just help to create opportunities for them to be nurtured, whether it's by us or by someone else that cares about them and understands what their goals are and what their skill sets are, and just help create opportunities for them. So.
Right. Now, I also saw that you're involved in, I think it was an anti-bullying as well, anti-bullying campaign. And I'm sure that you can draw from an experience that you had, a terrible experience in March of 2004 involving police brutality. If you would, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so with respect to the anti-bullying campaign, I was a spokesperson for the Toronto Argonauts football club. When we launched that campaign, it's now, spun off into a couple of different programs that the team runs. And, we used to work with a number of various community service organizations that were, doing things in the high schools. The regional police force was one. We had Crime Stoppers as an organization. They were one. We had an organization called Rescue, which stands for Reaching Every Student Quickly. So we used to, you know, do a number of different things where I, you know, I was part of spearheading some of those initiatives. In March of 04, I was assaulted by two corrupt police officers, undercover police officers. When they realized that I'd done, you know, so much work with the police force, I'd actually 3 months before I was assaulted by them, I did a racial sensitivity training for the force, for new officers before they put them out on the street, and you know, just a number of different things. I did a lot of different events for them. I guess from what I understand, once they realized that, they realized that they had messed up, and somewhat of a cover up began. So instead of coming forward and saying, you know, we made a mistake, and they instead tried to cover their tracks, if you will, by saying that they saw me with drugs and I threw the drugs down and I assaulted them. And
so how did this, like, when this incident occurred, were you leaving a place? How and when did this happen?
Well, it happened in the evening. I was had arrived at a location. We were carpooling with a couple of my teammates. Well, actually, they were new teammates. They had just signed with the team, but I had played with them prior in university with one, and with the Argonauts, with the other gentlemen. And so they had just signed with Hamilton, which was the team that I was playing for at that time. So we had planned to go out and celebrate. So we decided to carpool in a city called Mississauga, and I got to the carpool location first and was waiting on them when, you know, two guys approached me, you know, scruffy-looking guys, jeans and, you know, just kind of like an unpressed shirt type thing, came up to me asking me if I had any drugs or anything of that nature, and I said no, and thought that would be the end of it, but they ended up surrounding me, or one guy stopped beside me, the other guy continued walking, so I thought he was gone, but when I looked around, he was actually standing in my blind spot, and they grabbed me, started going through my pockets, and you know, I was asking what was going on. They said they were police officers, so I kind of breathed a sigh of relief until they went through my pockets and didn't find anything, and then said that they had to put cuffs on me. Then I started to kind of wonder what was really happening, and their behavior was such that I was convinced that they weren't police officers, because I didn't know any officer to behave that way. And when one of the officers, when I asked why, you know, why I'd have to have cuffs on, and one of the officers punched me and said to do what you're told, you effing a-hole, I really knew that they weren't police officers, and started running, and stopped when I was instructed to stop or I'll shoot.
Wow.
Those were the words that I heard. And so I stopped then, and I was just trying to figure out what was going on. I posed a question, but the response came with a right cross. And, and you know, they threw me down, and I was beaten, and that started that whole fiasco. So it's been absolutely crazy. You know, I know everyone has their different beliefs in terms of spiritual beliefs and that type of thing, and ours was just, you know, to obviously we believe strongly in prayer, and we prayed about the situation and asked that the truth be known throughout it, because we had to go to court and had to listen to these officers lie on the stand, and like, it was really nonsensical listening to them. And you know, we prayed for the truth to come out, and it was, some people call it irony, some call it a stroke of luck. We know better. But right before we went to a verdict, or the judge rendered a decision, maybe a few weeks before it was supposed to go to that, we got a call saying that one of the officers, the arresting officer in the case, was himself arrested by the RCMP, which is like the FBI in the U.S., for trafficking cocaine. They found 17 kilos at his house. So with that now, you know, some some of the things that we were dealing with in the media, in terms of the media treated it like, here's another, you know, black athlete, football player, gone crazy or what have you, on drugs,
right.
You know, that type of thing. And, you know, it was very difficult, still continues to be a very hurtful situation, just in terms of what we've had to deal with as a family. And, yes, it's been pretty crazy. But, you know, once that officer was charged, I think for a lot of people, like we had a lot of officers coming out of the woodworks to apologize because they, you know, I guess had thought that I was guilty. So it's been quite the journey. It's been difficult, but we're making it through.
And you were acquitted?
Yeah. So I was acquitted. We then filed a civil suit against the police. And there's so much irony in this. The officer that was arrested for trafficking cocaine he's been suspended with pay for about 2 years now. The other officer was reassigned to another position on the force, and actually last year or the year before last, we had a short circuit in our furnace, and sent smoke throughout the house. So my wife called 911, and guess who responded? I wasn't home.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, one of the officers, not the one that was suspended with pay, but the other officer, actually responded to the 911 call. So my wife was absolutely just freaking out, understandably so. You know,
of course.
Yeah, so, you know, there's been a lot of just, like, just crazy type things where, you know, it's really been like something out of a bad, bad nightmare or a bad movie, you know. But it's been eye-opening and very enlightening in that, you know, just understanding that it's not an isolated situation. I wished it was, and that's probably one of the most hurtful things with it. And, you know, to understand there's good and bad in everything, right, in every occupation. And there's people that get their occupations for various reasons. So it's just an accountability thing, though, that I think was, you know, was kind of lacking or is kind of lacking in terms of we need to hold each other accountable. If you're out there representing me, you know, the way you behave reflects on how I behave. So, you know, silence is consent, or just acting as if, you know, things don't happen. That type of thing is unacceptable. But I was in a position where, you know, I'm a professional athlete. I have a support system. I have a family. You know, I have some credibility established within the community. But what happens to those who don't? You know,
exactly.
That, you know, they're struggling to find a voice, and basically they're like no one would believe them because, you know, they haven't done anything out in the community. So it's been difficult just understanding that it happens, and it happens to, you know, young folks, so teenagers. It happens to new immigrants. It happens to folks who don't have good command of the English language, and it happens to folks who have been in trouble with the law before. And if you fall into any of those categories, it's going to be difficult for you, extremely difficult to address the situation and try to find justice and resolution, fair or equitable resolution through the process. So that's been hard, understanding that. But, you know, at the same time, I know that for me, the level of irony is so high that I'm convinced that it happened to me for a purpose. So that, you know, I'm still learning as to what that purpose might be, but I'm sure that it to help others possibly find their voice And,
absolutely,
find that,
the irony of law enforcement in that they're there to serve and protect,
yes,
that they didn't do either of those in this instance, and like you said, for others, that this is an absolutely terrible situation that you and your family have had to endure, and you have a platform on which to let it be known, but to those who don't, they can just be thrown into the group of stereotypical this or that, you know.
Yes. Absolutely.
And they can't afford representation, and
yes,
they're just thrown into the circuit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I acknowledge that policing is a very difficult job, and that on a day-to-day basis, they face some tough situations and tough challenges. But at the same time, I think that, you know, they still have to be held accountable for their actions, as we all are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they need help, you know. Generally, they're proud and can't really show that they need help because of the position that they hold in society. It's difficult for them to show any sign of weakness or vulnerability because of the perceived impact it might have on the public's perception of them as an organization. So, but, you know, I like to keep it real. So, you know, how can we help the situation, right? It's,
mm-hmm,
it's going to take everybody pulling together to make the world a better, safer place. So we all have to acknowledge that we all have shortcomings. But, you know, through collaboration and by leveraging each other's strengths, that's how we could get better and be stronger as a community and as a society at large. So.
Absolutely. Now, let's move into your business. You are the president and CEO of Game Day Training and Consulting.
Yes.
If you would tell our listeners what all that involves.
Okay, so Game Day, the initial focus was on running leadership programming for youth. We have since launched a nonprofit charitable organization called One Voice, One Team. And the focus of that is to obviously run leadership programs for youth, but the reason we went nonprofit was to increase the scope in terms of opportunities to engage more youth and to take the level of engagement to a higher degree where we're able to really tap in and provide opportunities for them to make a difference and to give back to their communities and to really realize that they could be positive and successful contributors to their immediate community, so whether that be their school community and where they live, as well as to the larger global community. So it's really building leadership capacity in them and then giving them opportunities to put it into practice. So one of the things that we espouse, when I first went down to Northern Illinois, I was working out at the Student Rec Center, and a guy came up to me and touched my arm and said, "Hey, man, you're swole." And I'd never heard the term swole before. So I kind of looked at him and I said, "Pardon me?" And he said, "You're swole, man, like muscular." So I said, "Oh, okay, I guess I'm swole." So I designed a workout program, and my nickname is Bo, and I called the workout program Bo's Get Swole Program. And it was about the preparation for excellence on the football field. And so it's now since evolved, and it represents our flagship leadership development program, where the S stands for self-respect, the W for work hard, the O for overcoming adversity or obstacles or challenges, the L stands for leading by example, and the E stands for excellence. So we, those are the principles that we espouse, and you know, we engage the youth through various mentoring and mentorship type of opportunities, where we have community leaders that work alongside us and go into the schools and share their stories with the students, stories of hope, stories of inspiration, stories of overcoming, so that the students could, you know, find that hope and realize that they're not in it on their own. And really, once they find that within themselves, we give them opportunities to to identify their passions and plug into those passions to make a difference in someone else's life. So it's been very rewarding. It's been very positive. Feedback has been phenomenal. So as you know, we're looking to again increase the scope of the offerings that way. So with respect to game day now, game day runs the high performance side of things. So football camps, or we have folks who have played pro basketball. So that's an area that we're getting into again, just more specialty, high performance type things, as well as things with adults. Whereas One Voice, One Team is focused on the character based leadership development programming for youth run in day camp, or summer camp formats, as well as in schools with the school boards and individual schools.
I see. So the game day is more sport-specific, where the One Voice, One Team is more growth and leadership and mentoring.
That's correct.
Okay.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay, and...
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. And I see that on your website you were talking about different things that you... topics you like to speak on: decision-making, overcoming obstacles, the importance of education, goal-setting, and identifying heroes.
Yes.
Which of those do you feel would be the most important to a developing child that needs someone or something to believe in?
I think the identification of a hero. I think a lot of the youth struggle nowadays in finding their identity. You can see just with the huge emphasis on, you know, individuals putting up their own websites or having their space on, whether it's on YouTube or MySpace or, you know, a number of the other different sites that allow folks to really broadcast or communicate to the world what they're about, right? So it's, you know, a lot of folks, young and old, struggle with that, the whole identity piece. So the identification of heroes really focuses on identifying the characteristics that we hold in high regard, and really plugging into some of those characteristics as we move towards bettering ourselves and creating opportunities that as we understand ourselves more and understand the things that motivate us, we're able to capitalize on those things and whether it's create employment opportunities through that or find employment opportunities through those passions, whatever it takes to put ourselves in a position where we are doing the things that we love and the things that we're passionate about and the things that we can use to make a difference in someone else's life. That's really the overall focus. So we strongly believe that it begins with understanding who you are, what you're about, and in that, you identify other folks who have those character traits that you hold in high regard that you want to emulate as you move through your lifetime, and whether it's your academic career or professional career, the identification of those heroes is key.
Now, you mentioned that this has been very rewarding and I'm sure a bit challenging at times. Can you think of one specific instance that stands out in your mind as one of the most rewarding so far, or where you've seen the most growth in a child or an individual?
Absolutely. You know, Elaine, one of the biggest challenges is that, when I say it's been rewarding, it's been kind of heartwarming, rewarding, because from a fiscal standpoint, we're still working to get that to where it needs to be. But one of the things that, that has been very powerful is that each one of these students has a story, and you really don't often get to know what that story is, but, you know, the students will open up from time to time, and there was, you know, we have a graduation ceremony. I'm going to speak to our one of our camps. So in the camp scenario, we run for 5 days. Each day we focus on a different principle: self-respect on Monday, work hard on Tuesday, et cetera. And by Wednesday, we need to make decisions on who is likely to graduate, so who's demonstrated the principles and who hasn't. And, you know, we had at one particular camp, we had a number of students that were on the fence. And on the Thursday morning, we asked students to communicate what they felt about their performance and whether or not they feel that they should graduate. And there was this one student who was really, he's small in stature, but he was one of the biggest bullies at his school. Like, he was taking big kids' lunch money and doing all this stuff. And if you looked at him, he looks like the cutest little, you just want to squeeze him. And, you know, so I was blown away just hearing about, you know, how he acted at school. But when he got to camp, you could see it. By the Wednesday, oh, pardon me, the Thursday morning when we asked folks to share, he stood up and he said that, he says, I realized that, you know, I haven't been acting up to my potential. And right now, today, I'm making the decision to really give myself a chance to be better and to get better, and I'm going to do everything I can. And it was so incredible that, like, that statement that, you know, the leaders were looking around at each other like, wow, that for him to stand up in front of a big group and say that was huge. And the thing is, his actions followed up on what he said. And even when he went back to the school, we got a call from the principal and one of the teachers saying, what did you guys do to this boy? Like, it's night and day. And so, you know, just hearing those types of things, you know, where, you know, you're seeing that you had some type of impact. And I'm not saying, you know, it was all us, because there are other influences that he has in his life as well. But, you know, where you're able to see that, it's very rewarding in that, you know, it helps you know that you're doing something right. You're on the right track in some respect. And I could give you 20 stories, different stories along those lines of just youth who have overcome significant challenges and still come with a smile on their face, ready to help somebody else. They've got incredible stories. They don't even know it yet. These guys are, you know, male and female. They have opportunities to change the world, and they're just beginning to realize some of their potential. So seeing that light bulb go off, there's nothing like it. So it's
I can awesome. Imagine, and you've helped to contribute to that, because those children are, to some degree, at a crossroads. And the fact, again, talking about planting seeds, and a lot of times when I speak with people, I always say, you know, you don't necessarily need to have an exact roadmap pointing you where you need to go, but you need a compass to know what direction that you should be going in. And I think that through your organization, you are definitely doing this for these children, and again, giving back and making the world a much better place. So thank you very much. And Orlando, unfortunately, our show is coming to a close. I'm so enjoying this interview, by the way. If you would, I'm sure you have many people that you'd like to thank. If you could, go ahead and get those thank yous out now.
Yes. Well, I have to thank a gentleman by the name of Paul Cartwright. He's with sportsandlives.com. He's really, during some of my challenging times, he has really created some opportunities for me to really find that strength within myself and within our family. So he and his family have been very supportive. My in-laws, my parents, my mom, my dad, they're down in Florida. My sister is down in Florida. They've been incredible support as well, just calling me all the time to make sure everything's good. Yeah, my wife has been she's my everything. She's held down the fort. She does, like, we have three young boys, Dante, Justice, and Marcus, and she does an incredible job with them, and, you know, taking care of everything around the home, and you know, taking care of me. And you know, like you said, the list could go on and on. Chuck and Sherry Ely, my mother and father-in-law, they've been incredible as well. And he's also a football superstar. He's actually, they're doing a documentary on him on PBS for some of his on-field and off-field accomplishments. So there's been a number. Michael Clemens, pinball, just great inspirations for me. a lot of folks that I have to thank, and the number one I've got to thank the man upstairs. I thank God for sparing my life that night and helping me realize that I do have a purpose, and really providing that compass, as you said, Elaine, that to move me towards where I can most effectively serve mankind. So I, you know, if I wondered what my purpose was before, now I know. So I'm better for that. So.
And you're definitely helping to impact the lives of other people as a result as well. So. And if you would, give us your contact information one more time before we come to a close.
Absolutely. I can be reached at www.orlandobowen.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you want to send a shout-out or give me a high-five electronically, that's fine. You can email me there. Orlando@orlandobowen.com is my direct email address. Also, I can be reached at sportscelebs.com. With respect to speaking engagements, you know, I just want to be able to help out where I can, and I know that I bring a lot of value in terms of my perspectives, and some of my life experiences help other people find that light, that inspiration, that hope, that drive, that reason to continue. So wherever I can be of assistance, I'm here and I'm ready.
Wonderful. And we look forward to hearing more and more about you and your wonderful organizations and the lives that you continue to touch.
Thank you so much, Elaine. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much, and you have a good evening.
Thank you. You too. Bye for now.
You are listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. I hope you've enjoyed the show this evening. This is Elaine Seth. Until next time, remember, keep your mind right, your heart true, your head up, and live your dream. Good night.